No. It's actually all gone.
It's not as usual.
We knew that there was vodka in there. We just passed it around.
Everybody took a swig, huh?
We'll begin by saying, you're not the boss of me. Okay, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay. We appreciate the thoughts. So these are questions that, while they relate specifically to the issues of collective bargaining, they also, they're philosophical questions about the essence and identity of a university and the work we undertake in every day. And we appreciate everyone's commitment to the value of that collaborative process, and that as building the best results that we can for our faculty and students and everyone. So we appreciate the philosophical discussions about that. For bylaws, the bylaws issue, what we think may be the best approach, as you mentioned, Mike, you said because we both have targeted towards the specific elements in the CBA where there's waivers on these issues. Okay. You've mentioned that these are items that the teams have agreed to previously. We think maybe the best approach would be to go back and look at those specific waivers, the specific places in the CBA where it says, this will be, produced by the departments, reviewed by the provost, something like that. You mentioned specifically about process, right? So we can go back and maybe revisit those specific places to see if there's clarifications, things like timeline and process. That might be an avenue to address, I think, both teams' concerns without introducing a new bylaw article or the language that you guys have proposed here as well. So we can go back and we'll look for clarifications that could potentially be made in those specific instances.
All right. Well, we look forward to that conversation.
Yeah. One of the very specific instance where that happens is a lot of times it's just timeline, right? Like we'll have departments. Some departments take a long time in getting those revised. Like, I'll give an example. The university keeps a collection of all the department bylaws on the website, right? And this is like the date of approval, that last reviewed, that kind of stuff. Many of those are, they're not up to date. Like, and I know that departments have revised those bylaws, and sometimes they haven't sent them on the elements that are required to be approved. Like they may not have sent them on, or they send them on to be approved, and it's just it goes off into the ether. We understand that administrators have different, they have a lot of obligations, right? But there's no specific timeline associated with some of those things about getting feedback. So it becomes, dead in the water, right, without that approval. So I think there's things that we can look at on those specific instances within the bylaws.
Okay. Well, like I said, and that's what I thought I heard part of your concern was, is missteps in the process.
Okay. That sounds good. On the evaluation remediation plans, communications capacity, So a few thoughts. The essential element that I hear you saying is that you believe that there is a need for supervisors to be able to communicate to faculty beyond just in the annual evaluation and sustained performance process, right? our concern is not with communication, but is with an implementation of an evaluation system that has not been bargained, is not part of the CBA, and is a way potentially of circumventing the standards that exist in the CBA. To kind of illustrate that, to put that in specific terms, like I said, this is not a hearing, it is not a deposition, but we brought in a couple copies. This is the redacted, the specific plan at issue from the current ULP that's taking place. Now, I didn't want a whole bunch of copies of this floating around,
so no,
copy of each. We've added significant redactions to this to make sure that there's no identifying information. When I look at this material, what I see is an administrator who has created specific deadlines, like arbitrary, specific a timeline, right? And all of this is outside of the annual evaluation process or the SPE process. And not only has made like arbitrary and capricious deadlines and production timelines and meeting schedules, but has also explicitly defined the disciplinary action and consequences of that. It says in here, failure to meet the objectives of the remediation plan may result in employment action, right? And so not only has this administrator defined specific deadlines, specific production timelines, but it has made what we view as arbitrary and capricious deadlines subject to employment actions, right? And this is nowhere within the bounds of the CBA. I think it's also interesting, if you look at this closely, that it documents that significant communication is currently ongoing and taking place with this faculty member. It says that, as noted in your evaluations of all these specific years, we've repeatedly outlined the need to publish and the need to bring up your standards. So this remediation plan actually documents a clear pattern of communication that's taking place with this faculty member about the need to publish and such. So what we've tried to address is to hear you about communication, right? But also to reiterate our position that we believe that this is, you know, a process by which this administrator is circumventing the established evaluation criteria as a precursor to disciplinary action that hasn't been negotiated. And so we can fully support communication as long as it has this one caveat added to it. And we'll pass this around. So this, you both in our meeting last time and in our meeting today, Mike, you've characterized this as the need for communication. And so we've said here, so performance improvement plans or remediation plans are intended solely as communication instruments to faculty, and the results of such plans cannot be used as a source or cause for disciplinary or employment action, right? If there is this clarification that when an administrator reaches out to a faculty member to communicate these things outside of the context of what's been negotiated, it is solely a source for communication. It is not a precursor and cannot be used as a precursor to implement disciplinary action. That's our essential concern, and that's the source of this UOP.
Okay. Not talking about the UOP right now.
It's not a hearing.
And not talking necessarily about the particular PMP that's in that UOP. But looking at this language, we're going to take this back and we're going to share it with the university, and we're going to see if we're comfortable with this and maybe resolve all of this with this language. But I just have, maybe my team certainly might have other questions, but I have a process question about this, how this language would work. So, if I have a supervisor communicate to me that I'm doing something wrong, and I get a remediation plan, and that conduct is identified on that plan, and I fail the PIP, or I fail the remediation plan, obviously covered by this language, is that the failure of the PIP or remediation plan would not stand as a cause for discipline. That's what you proposed. I understand that. But what about the conduct that's described in the plan? Doesn't it still have kind of a life that could go forward? I mean, so it's not that you fail the plan, but you continue to do the conduct that's in the plan. Like, so let's say I'm missing classes. Maybe it's a bad example, but let's say I'm missing classes. And somebody puts me on a remediation plan and says, stop missing classes. Well, I continue to miss classes. At some point, I'm going to get an unsatisfactory evaluation or discipline for missing classes. Not for failing the PIP, but for the conduct, because that conduct continued it isn't like if I say something, if I identify kind of in a PIP, it's like protected. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, right, I understand your question and about process. So, and we talked about some of these examples last time in our session. But so, in the examples that you're outlining, right, all of that. So, well, the person's not teaching classes, right?
Right.
We have language about job abandonment in the CBA, right? We have a disciplinary action article that outlines incompetence or misconduct and so there's nothing. We believe that there are significant and clear and substantial processes that are already currently in place to address the type of circumstances or issues that you're bringing up.
Well, John, let me give you an example, just so my team understands what I'm thinking about. I can say in this type of plan, you're missing classes, and you got to watch out for that. Mm-hmm. And if you miss the number of days that constitutes job abandonment in the contract, then I can act on that. Even though the plan was a warning, I still get to act on that. But what I cannot do through the plan is truncate the period by saying, you know, I've kind of lost patience with you. Yeah. So miss one more day and you're abandoned your job, right? I can't change the contract or plan, but I'm trying to understand your perspective. Yeah. I can't change the contract to a plan, but I can warn somebody to a plan, and then if they violate the contract, I can take the action. Even that doesn't constitute a source.
So I think a clear way to say that, to show this. So in, and again, this is just as an example, right?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this? Communicate as rather than a plan or a remedial, but just as a communication, right? There's absolutely nothing wrong with an administrator communicating, saying, you have your sustained performance evaluation coming up in two years. We've as has been documented in your annual evaluation, you need to increase your publications to reach this certain standard, so you've met the tenure criteria by your SPE date, which is coming up. And I want to check base. And this doesn't have to be a plan; it's just a communication. How's it coming? Right? What's the process on that?
Right.
I gave you this evaluation lecture. I just want to communicate with you and see how it's going, to help you if I can, or things that I can implement. There's nothing that prevents a faculty member from, or an administrator from doing that daily, or calling and checking with their faculty. There's no gag order on administrators on how they, to communicate with faculty, to check in with them on these things. The problem here is that it's not the reaching out to the faculty, but it's inventing and creating a completely different formalized plan and standard with expectations.
It's saying here's A, B, and C, and if you don't do that, then
by these specific dates,
A, B, and C itself,
and published by these specific dates, and it's arbitrary and capricious standards that have not been negotiated.
I think we understand your intent with this language. Does anybody have any questions or thoughts on that? All right, thanks.
Speaking of process, right?
Yes.
So my understanding, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but HB, we have till February 1st to respond on if without a date of the hearing.
Okay.
So, our last session, you guys said to reach out, send dates to add potential times on. I wrote our GC office and said, we're available anytime. I didn't hear anything back about adding additional dates. We may want to add a date in front of that February 1st deadline to give you guys a chance to think about these things and respond, and then before we decide whether or not we need a hearing to go forward on this.
Okay.
Or we can just go ahead and I personally recommend we just go ahead and set a date for a hearing and then cancel it if we're able to reach agreement.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me talk to my team and we'll do one or the other. Between now and February 1st.
The deadline's February 4 for the note.
Oh, February 4
is really tight for me. Mm-hmm. Between now and February
4. It's way too specific. We're never that specific. Don't. You're setting the bar way too high.
Yeah,
Yeesh.
Okay. Why don't we take a compass?
Yeah. And that's everything we got.
Okay. So even if it means we have commitments to commitments to some other bargaining, some other things that are going on. Even though it might mean that we have to give dates to the Public Employees Relations Commission on or about the 4th of February, the earliest time that we can meet again is the 6th of February. And it would have to be in the afternoon.
That should be fine.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, even if we give dates and work on the 4th, we're not probably not going to hear back from them for a couple of days. So.
Yeah, and when we get it, I mean, so like you said, we'll write HB and say, let's go ahead and submit for dates, and we'll continue discussing this.
Okay.
Good. Did you have a time on that?
Yeah, afternoon, 3, 2. I think I can get here.
I should phrase that. Let me say after. I've got class at 6 o'clock, Thursday night class.
All right, no, it's okay. I have negotiations in Okaloosa County in the morning, but I think I'm going to be able to get here like 1:30, 2 o'clock, something like that.
I think 2 o'clock.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, that sounds good. So that's the 6th at 2 o'clock?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
New coach? We have a new coach, Dan.
So I heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a second date for bargaining that you can put on the schedule?
The 18th of February.
Okay. What day of the week is that? Yeah.
Tuesday.
Okay. Any time on that?
We're flexible as to time on that.
Okay. I'm flexible on that as well. My preference is 10 a.m. Is that 11?
Yeah, okay.
10? 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
10 a.m.
The driver can get you here at that time?
If not, I'll have to
find a new driver.
Uber.
Uber.
I drive every once in a while. Just to
keep in practice.
Just to be able to say it.
A couple of things, too. This is not a hearing or a deposition. I heard you explicitly say that there's no changes to the university's position in that ULP, right? I understand that. In your conversations, what I heard was an acknowledgement that this specific PIP may have been out of bounds, right? And I know that you didn't say that explicitly, but
I was reflecting your position.
Okay. So previously, we had proposed a settlement to make this, to resolve this, right? Which was essentially the university acknowledging that this went outside the CBA, right? And that the university would only apply performance improvement plans, remediation plans as they're outlined in the CBA going forward, right? And that acknowledgement as a settlement would allow us to pull back that PIP, right? Yes. We've been giving each other PIPs the last. That would allow us to pull back the ULP, right? That was not acceptable in the way in which it was articulated to the university previously from our lawyer. If that's something that you all would reconsider, right? We could potentially revisit that if that's something that the university wanted. But if not, we'll just go forward.
I will bring that back to the university.
Okay. And I'll let HB. We'll let him know that.
Okay. Great.
Just the content. The other thing, just pragmatically going forward, we have a lot of proposals in different articles kind of floating around like that, but not a lot signed off on, right?
Right.
At the first of during the first semester, you know, there were several elements about, like, the non-discrimination, I think some Article 11 stuff. There's about three or four articles that we were kind of discussing, you know, I think in pretty close to agreement. Our plan is we're going to put a proposal, maybe those together as a packet to look at next time, some of those first three or four articles, and we'll have that, bring that in. And but the things about, like, bylaws and grievance, things like that, they won't be included in that. Right. Okay. Like, so maybe we can sign off on a small packet of some of the things we've been talking okay. about as a way to, you know, kind of chart things
forward. That sounds manageable. That sounds like a good approach.
Okay. Okay. I think that's everything we have.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Have a safe trip back.
Thank you.